All right, team, welcome back to the Man Talk Show. Connor Beaton here. And today we're going to be diving into how do you end the anxious avoidant dynamic, right? So maybe you're an anxious person or you're an avoidant person and you found yourself in a relationship with the opposing attachment style, which is probably what has brought you here. And I hope that you've enjoyed the series that I've been doing, because I've been doing this A Man's Guide To, where I've dug into how to end codependency, how to resolve your avoidant attachment style or your anxious attachment style or your fearful avoidant attachment style. So if you're watching this and you haven't watched those are going to be incredibly helpful to doing a deep dive into how you as an individual can move closer towards secure attachment. So this video is going to talk specifically about the relationship, how it happens, why it happens, and how do you resolve it? And I'm going to give you some very specific things that you as an individual can do, and then some specific things that you as a couple can tackle. So let's dive in and talk a little bit first about what characterizes the anxious avoidant dance. The first thing is this push-pull dynamic, where one person seems to be pulling away and the other one seems to be a stage 5 clear. No, just kidding, anxious people, just kidding. But you can tell which one I was in the relationship. I was clearly an avoidant person with that joke, right? One person pulls away and one person pushes forward. And generally, you have one person that is moving towards an over-indexing of self-reliance or self-protection, and that's the avoidant person, as a relational strategy, right? So their relational strategy is, I rely on me more than I rely on us, to a really detrimental degree to the relationship. And then the other person has a relational strategy of, I need you to be okay in order for me to be okay. Or I need to know that you're okay in order for me to feel okay. Or I need you to tell me that I'm okay so that I can be okay. Whereas the avoidant is, I don't need you to be okay. I don't need this relationship to be okay. I can only rely on me in order to be okay. So that's just a quick little summary of what it can look like. One of the things that I wanted to try and do was condense down why this happens. And I looked at a lot of content on the internet. I watched a bunch of YouTube videos. I looked at some of the articles that have been written. And first off, they all come from a very feminine perspective. So that was quite interesting to read. Like, I couldn't find a lot of men talking about attachment styles and talking about attachment in general. So it was kind of fascinating on that one part. But there seems to be this notion out there. First off, one of the things that I noticed was that anxious people seem to have less of a rap than avoidant people. Like, avoidant people are sort of positioned on some of these blogs and some of these videos as like the villain, and the anxious person is the victim. And that's not the case. I want to just dissolve this notion that there's a villain and a victim. There's just a pursuer and the pursued. There's the person pushing and the person pulling away. It's not a moral thing, right? These are both behavioral patterns and relational patterns that were birthed quite early in your life. And so I say that because I know many of you guys that are watching this, whether you're the anxious one or the avoidant one, have oftentimes a very detrimental story internally of like, God, like there's something wrong with me that's causing this. And there's not something that's wrong with you that's causing this. It's that something has gone on in your life that has caused you to either pull away or actively needed to pursue. So I wrote down this phrase that I think summarizes why the avoidant and anxious dance is so strong. Because so many anxious people find themselves in a relationship with avoidant and vice versa. It's quite common. So here's what I wrote down. I said, sometimes you're not in love or even drawn to the person themselves. You're drawn to the qualities that you think they possess that you know you lack, right? So sometimes we're not drawn to the person. We're drawn to the qualities that they possess that we know we lack, right? And so this is the ultimate version of a shadow-oriented relationship where your anxiety is doing the choosing of who you date, or your avoidance is doing the choosing of who you date. And so this part of you can be quite strong in choosing partners and choosing relationships that allow you to stay in this anxious pattern or this avoidant pattern. And the reason why these two are attracted to one another is not just because they're complementary opposites. They're attracted to one another because the anxious sees a part of themselves that they feel is lacking in the avoidant. And the avoidant sees and admires parts of themselves in the other person that they know they're lacking, right? So the avoidant person generally will, when you ask them, what do you admire about your partner? And they'll talk about the anxious person and they'll say, I love their passion. I love how open they are. I love their availability. I love their expression. I love how willing they are to, you know, to say what they want or say what they need. And usually those are all things that are missing inside of that avoidant person, right? They are not that they're lacking in passion necessarily, but they're not open. They're not necessarily available. They aren't as expressive as they would ultimately like to be, and they don't have any reliance on other people. And then if you talk to the anxious person, you say, what do you really love about your partner? And they'll talk about the avoidant person. They'll say, I'm attracted to how solid they are. I'm attracted to how independent they are. I'm attracted to how okay with being alone and having solitude they are. And they'll talk about those qualities and they'll say, you know, I love how much they're able to recognize themselves or validate themselves or, you know, deal with hard things. And again, those are all things that generally the anxious feels like either in a conscious or deeply unconscious way, they are lacking. And so this in a way is a relationship of, and this might sound harsh, but it's a relationship of insecurities. And it's why the anxious avoidant dance is so hard. It's because the thing that has brought the two of you together are these sort of deeper insecurities. And those insecurities can be conscious. They can be things that you are very aware of and you know the insecurity, you know the insecure behavior, you know the insecure pattern, or they're things that are more hidden from you. And that's more the case with the avoidant. Oftentimes, the avoidant isn't fully aware of, maybe at first, of the deep fear of closeness, the deep fear of relying on another person, the deep fear and insecurity of expressing themselves. And so when those two things come together, it's our insecurities choosing a partner in an effort to try and resolve the insecurities, right? Our insecurities don't want to stay necessarily in place and be there forever. Our insecurities, just like your anxiousness or your depression, it's looking for some type of resolution. It doesn't want to just stay put and stay in place. It might feel like that sometimes, but our insecurities are always looking for some type of evolution or resolution. So just keep that in mind as we continue to talk about how to end this anxious avoidant dance. So next, I'm going to give you some examples of an anxious avoidant dynamic, and then I'm going to give you, you know, how can it succeed? When do you know to leave or that it's not going to work? And then what do you specifically need to do in order to heal this type of dynamic? So examples of the anxious avoidant dynamic is the chase and withdraw pattern that I've been talking about. This is the push and pull pattern where the anxious person will press for more intimacy, more reassurance, more validation, more soothing, those types of things. And this will push the avoidant partner further and further away because they will feel a pressure to caretake the other person, to be responsible for the other person, to be close to and intimate with the other person, all of which might reactivate either some trauma in their past or some fear of closeness or some physical and emotional reminder that intimacy isn't safe. Next is conflict over closeness and space. Conflict over closeness and space. So the anxious partner might initiate conversations about the future, about when are we moving in together, or how do you feel like this relationship is going, or, you know, should we be in a committed relationship and not date anybody else, or is it time for us to get engaged? And this type of bid for connection. And it might even not even be that big. It might be like, hey, on Friday night, I really would love for us to go out to a date, you know, go out for a date, go out for dinner, like whatever it is. And that can cause the avoidant person to feel trapped, to feel enclosed on, to feel like they have to make some level of commitment that's maybe uncomfortable for them, or commit to some level of intimacy and closeness that's uncomfortable for them. And this can create the conflict. So it's very often one of the biggest hallmarks, okay? And I really want you to like write this one down, keep this in mind, because this is so important to undoing the anxious avoidant dance. So often a hallmark of the anxious avoidant dynamic is that when there are bids for closeness and intimacy and connection, when there are moments that closeness, intimacy, and connection are possible, or intimacy, closeness, and connection is requested or demanded, conflict ensues, all right? So intimacy and closeness and connection, when that starts to arise in the relationship, this is usually the inflection point for some type of conflict. And this is where, you know, it might be that the avoidant person starts to criticize the anxious one, or the anxious one starts to criticize the avoidant one. You never want to spend time with me. How come you don't want to go out to dinner or like spend time with my friends or my family? And this will create conflict. So a lot of the conflict that you experience in this type of relationship revolves around just being close, just being connected, staying intimate. And then last, this is another big one, is misinterpretation of signals. Okay, misinterpretation of signals. Very simply put, you will have either partner, the anxious or the avoidant, misrepresenting or misinterpreting the signals from the other person, right? So the anxious person might see the avoidant asking for some space, or saying, hey, you know what? Tonight, I just want to kind of like do my own thing. I'm going to, you know, go into the shop and do my woodworking, or I'm going to watch my own show, or I'm going to go to the gym or Brazilian jiu-jitsu or like dance class or whatever it is. And then the anxious person misinterprets that as, you don't love me, you don't want to be with me, you're leaving me, et cetera, et cetera. And vice versa, right? The avoidant person might hear the anxious person saying, hey, you know what? We haven't been on a date in a few weeks. I would love to just go out with you on Friday night and like go have a beer, or, you know, go out and have a good meal. And the avoidant person might misinterpret that as like, oh, you're wanting, you know, some level of commitment. You're trying to push something, or you're being so needy right now, or whatever it is, even though it's just a bid for connection. So again, a lot of the conflict will come out of bids for connection and bids for solitude. Okay, can these types of relationships work? This is one of the biggest questions that I get from people when they're talking about attachment styles. The answer is unequivocally yes. They do take a decent amount of work, and they take some time for that work to set in. There are some key ingredients to making this relationship work, okay? The main one is that both of you have to be willing participants in doing what I'm outlining in this episode. And that might mean that you go and work with somebody as a couple. That might be a part of it. But at the very least, you have to both be willing participants to recognizing that this is an issue that's getting in the way and wanting to work on it to better the relationship. Without that agreement, there's nothing that you can do. All right. It's not going to move forward. So that brings me to the next piece, which is, how do you know that it's not going to work? Because that's another question that I get, which is like, should we break up? Should we not stay together? Number one, if your partner after months or, you know, however long is still not willing to work on this dynamic, then that might be a sign that it's time to go, right? If you've both acknowledged that there's a big issue and disconnect between the two of you, and maybe you've even acknowledged that you two are in this avoidant and anxious dance, and they're not willing to work on it, whether they're the avoidant or the anxious partner, then that might be a sign that it's not going to work. And individually, a couple things need to happen. Number one, the avoidant has to be willing to lean in, communicate their needs, prioritize staying in connection when shit gets hard, and they have to be willing to start to lean into opening themselves and expressing themselves specifically around help and support, all right? Second, for the anxious person, you have to be willing to begin to self-soothe, to start to self-regulate, self-validate, and to build a deeper level of safety and worth within yourself. So those are sort of like the two missions. How do you end the dance? Well, let's talk about this, where I thought a lot about where I wanted to start with this part of the episode. And what I'm actually going to start with might be different than what you expected. I'm going to talk about how you end the punishment cycle that shows up in an anxious avoidant relationship. So every anxious avoidant relationship has some type of punishment cycle. And usually it's, you know, one person starting at the anxious or the avoidant, and then there's very specific behaviors that roll out after that. And so the dynamic looks something like this. The anxious partner will implement protest behaviors, and the avoidant partner will try and exert some level of control through detachment, okay? And again, we can get stuck in judging or criticizing our partner's behavior, right? Whether it's protest behavior or detachment. But the reality is, and I want you to remember this because it's so important, your partner learned this behavior as a protection mechanism when they were young, right? So you have to try and contextualize that your partner's doing this not because in that moment they're an adult, you know, choosing to punish you, choosing to protest, choosing to detach. They're doing that because there's a younger part of them that is afraid of intimacy. There's a younger part of them that's afraid of being abandoned or neglected. And so we have to have some level of empathy without letting that empathy overrun, you know, common sense within the relationship. But that's the general cycle. So here's what happens. The anxious person will implement some type of protest behavior to try and establish or reestablish connection. So instead of saying, hey, this is what I would like, there's some type of behavior that they enact, which creates the insecurity that continues to build the insecurity in the relationship. And so some signs of that protest behavior for you as the anxious person. And I want to make it clear, what I'm about to give both of you, anxious and avoidant person, is not to be weaponized against your partner. This isn't information to be like, oh, you're using protest behaviors, like shame on you, or you're using detachment behaviors, what's wrong with you? This is for you as the anxious person and the avoidant person to self-identify when you're in this mode of trying to punish to get connection or trying to punish to create distance, okay? So for the anxious person, excessive contact followed by punitive withdrawal. This is a very common cycle. What does it mean, excessive contact? Over-texting, over-communicating, emailing, calling a bunch of times, you know, talking at your partner, even though they've said, hey, like, I'm done right now, or I can't talk right now, leaving tons of voice memos, messaging them endless times on social media, but excessive contact followed by some type of punitive withdrawal, meaning you contact, you might dump emotionally on them, and then whoop, you withdraw entirely and you disconnect. And it's a ploy that's kind of like, come get me. And it might sound something like, I love you so much, and how come you don't? And I just want to love you, and I just want to be with you, and that kind of response. Next is scorekeeping. Anxious people are notorious for scorekeeping in the relationship. And again, this isn't to shame you. This is for you to develop the awareness to catch yourself doing this shit and to stop. To catch yourself and be like, oh man, I am scorekeeping again. And sometimes how you catch yourself in the cycle is by becoming aware of it and then calling it out and actually saying to your partner out loud or texting a friend, a buddy, and saying like, ah, I'm catching myself. I'm scorekeeping right now and I don't want to do that. So instead, I'm going to give my partner some recognition, some praise, some validation for what they've been doing in the relationship. Next is acting hostile in some capacity. What does that mean? It means you might threaten. It means that you might try and manipulate. It means that you might try and use coercion, but you are acting hostile in some ways because you're dysregulated internally and you are trying to get the other person to give you what you want. And so your anxiety has sort of taken over. And again, this isn't to excuse your behavior, but your anxiety takes over and you follow through on it. And so you might threaten the person that you're going to leave. You might threaten to disclose information about them. You might become hostile and threaten them in a different way. But that hostility is an unhealthy bid for a connection. We'll just put it that way. And then lastly, as an anxious person, you might use some type of emotional manipulation as the punishment. So again, this is coming out of a place of you as the anxious partner don't feel like your needs are being met. You don't feel close to their person. You're scared of being rejected. You're scared of being abandoned. You're scared of them moving away. And then you start to try and use emotional manipulation or coercion to get what you want. And that can look like a whole bunch of different ways. Breaking somebody's privacy, going through their phone, going through their messages, going through their emails, you know, using things that they said in the past against them. This is a really big one. If you're the anxious person, using times when your avoidant partner has opened up to leverage against them in the future, that's a really damaging one. So those are the behaviors you want to start to look for to end the punishment cycle. You want to catch yourself in those. And you might want to even want to listen to this part of the episode with your partner to say, you know, which one of these do I do? What does it look like? What does it sound like? When does it show up? And then you can make a little bit of a plan to catch yourself in the moment and have some resources and accountability so that you can move away from that type of behavior. All right, avoidant partners. Let's talk to you. On the other hand, an avoidant partner in punishment mode is going to try and exert some level of control through detachment and what's called deactivation strategies. And so, and just in a simple way, it's really about disconnecting from the other person. And you might be doing it because they are pressing you for something. You might be doing it because all of a sudden the two of you are in a good place and that feels frightening. Things are too easy. Things are normal. And so you start to drift away. You might be doing that because there's some needs that you don't feel like are being met in the relationship. And so you suddenly disconnect or you slowly disconnect. And some of these behaviors look like this. For the avoidant person in punishment cycle, it can look like your words not matching your actions. So for example, you could verbally express an avoidance of commitment. I don't want to do that Friday night, or I don't want to watch that show with you, but then you follow through with it, right? Then you like, you watch the show that you said you don't want to watch, or you go and do the thing on Friday night that you said that you don't want to do. And so that type of mismatching words and behaviors, words and choices, can be a strategy that creates confusion on the other side and that detaches and disconnects because the other person never really knows where you stand. It's not even a subtle one. It's just a hard to pin down one. So it creates disorientation within your girlfriend, within your wife, et cetera, or your boyfriend or your husband, depending on if you're, you know, whoever you are that's watching this. The next one for the avoidant person is hypercriticism and focusing predominantly on flaws. This is very common for the guys that grew up with a mom or a dad who was hypercritical, who didn't give love and attention, or who only gave love and affection and attention in performance-based ways, right? So when you did the right thing, when you said the right thing, then you got love, then you got affection, then you got the good job. And so that shows up in your relationship as an avoidant. So you can focus heavily on your partner's flaws. Next is a sort of pining for or a fixation for the one that got away. And rather than being fully present in the relationship, and this can come up in a bunch of different ways. I'm going to give you a couple of different examples. But the big one is like, oh, that one person that I was with that I really screwed up, my life would be so much better if I was just with that one person. Another version of this that I've seen with a lot of guys is a sort of like fixation on beauty or the body, right? So it's like, well, I really love her and I'm really attracted to her, but like, you know, there's this thing about her aesthetically that I don't really like. And that becomes something that gets hyper fixated on when you're having sex, when you're trying to be intimate, and it creates this space and separation between you and your partner because you're fixated on this perceived flaw or imperfection that you can't seem to let in. It's like, I think there was, I mean, this is kind of a funny version, but there's an episode of Seinfeld. I think it's George that's dating this woman that has man hands, and the whole episode, the whole episode is about, you know, having man hands. And I'm not saying, you know, if you're dating somebody and there's like genuinely something about them, they're like, I just can't get on board with that thing, whether it's a behavior or a characteristic or a trait, or even something physical. If you're like, if you just can't get on board with it, you can't get on board with it. But George was sort of like your classic avoidant, you know, he wanted love, he wanted relationships, but there was always something, you know, there was always something that he was hyper fixated on that he could never get over. And the episode with man hands was just such a good example. Next is avoiding emotional intimacy in the present day current relationship. And that can come out in a number of different ways. You might not want to label the relationship. You might not want to share the relationship online for fear of judgment. You might not want to tell your buddies about it, and you might not talk about it, or, you know, share your relationship with your family, even though it's been 2 years or, you know, something excessive like that. So you avoid emotional intimacy in the relationship. You don't open up. Maybe you don't talk to your partner about, you know, how things are going at work, or, you know, how you felt after the death of a parent, or you don't open up to them about what you've been experiencing in terms of this big life transition. But in some ways, you avoid emotional intimacy. And so this is very common, that when your partner's checking in on you, hey, how are you doing? How are you feeling after this thing has gone on? That you are just like, oh, I'm fine. No, I'm okay. No, nothing's wrong. And there's just a closed offness that happens. Lastly is hyper or hyposexuality. This means that for the avoidant person, you can move into a space of almost entirely disconnecting from your sexuality, or it becomes such a dominant force in the relationship that it's really the only conduit, the only door for any type of closeness and connection or intimacy that you'll allow to happen. So that is another part for the avoidant. All right. What do both of you individually need to do in order to move through this avoidant and anxious dance that so many people get caught in? I'm going to break it down into anxious and then avoidant and then relationships. So anxious, you need to learn to self-regulate and self-soothe. It is so common that the anxious person is inadvertently or indirectly demanding that through choices, through actions, through behaviors, through communication, demanding that the other person help the anxious person soothe and regulate what they're feeling, okay? And so you have to start to prioritize learning to be okay, learning to be safe in your body, in yourself, when you are feeling discomfort, when you have a fear that's coming up with your partner, when you have an anxiety about where the future of the relationship is going. Now, this doesn't mean that you can't have direct, clear conversations about, hey, where are things going? You know, it's been 6 months or it's been a year and I want to know where we stand. It doesn't mean that you can't have those conversations. It simply means that your work is to learn to ground yourself in the face of discomfort, hard conversations, your deep insecurities that might be coming up. What if I'm not good enough? What if I'm not smart enough? What if I'm not attractive enough to the other person? I need them to reassure me that I'm enough. So what you do is every time that this starts to come up, right? This anxiousness starts to come up. Am I enough? Are they going to leave me? Yada, yada, yada. You have some type of tool, a meditation practice, a breathwork practice, a journaling practice, where you can start to ground yourself, soothe yourself, regulate yourself, and then reinforce your own level of self-worth, okay? Super, super important. And this next one is going to help with this, which is end the validation trap. The trap that anxious partners get into, especially with avoidance, which causes a lot of conflict and chaos, is that you are constantly seeking validation from the other person, right? You're looking to them to reaffirm that you're smart enough, good enough, valuable, have worth, are lovable, all of those types of pieces. And it's not something that they can give you ever. They might be able to reinforce, they might be able to reassure, they might be able to comfort you for a period of time, but that will always dissipate. And so part of your mission is to go on a journey of self-recognition, to actually develop an inner infrastructure, an inner behavioral pattern of being able to recognize yourself, validate yourself, appreciate yourself. And you might have to practice that for months. It might be something that you keep a gratitude journal about and you have a very specific practice for yourself. It might be a way of being, a way of living that you start to do that every time you operate in a way that it reinforces that you've made a good decision, that you have value, that you offered something of value, that you contribute something of value, that you actually take a moment to recognize yourself for doing those things so that you can reinforce, yeah, you know what? I am doing a good job. I do have value. I do bring something to the table. I do contribute something in this marriage or this relationship. Next is create boundaries with your anxious behavior and get accountable. It's almost like for anxious people, what I was going to say is, you know, when we lack impulse control, it can look a bunch of different ways. You know, you might lack impulse control with porn or ice cream or popcorn, where just like the thought of having it all of a sudden takes you over and you can't stop yourself, right? You can't stop yourself from like going out and buying ice cream or getting, you know, making the popcorn at home or whatever it is. And for the anxious person, it's having no boundaries, having very porous boundaries with the anxious behavior, the over texting, the needing the validation, the why won't you just tell me that I'm good enough, that type of stuff. And so having a men's group, having an accountability group, having an accountability person, that when those anxious behaviors start to surface, you can get some support and say, hey, I'm feeling this, or I'm about to text bomb them. Like, can you just talk me off the ledge? Because I know this isn't the right choice. Starting to stand up and confront those anxious behaviors within yourself, that when it starts to come up and says, oh, I got to text bomb them, instead confronting that part and be like, no, I'm going to just pause. I know I don't want to text them. I shouldn't text them right now. Pause for an hour, for 2 hours, for 3 hours before you actually communicate anything. And then lastly, be very clear and direct about what you want and what you need in the relationship. And this can be challenging for an anxious person because the anxious person in some ways is almost always hoping that the avoidant partner or even the secure partner figures out what they're feeling and that they can somehow magically solve what they're feeling internally, which is, as we all know, impossible. Okay, that's the anxious. For the avoidant person, there's a couple really key things that need to be practiced. Number one is practice what I call relational reliance. Practice relational reliance. What does this mean? It means asking your partner for help, opening yourself up to getting support with something that you'd normally do on your own or that you would normally try and deal with in isolation. Whether it's asking for feedback on something, whether it's asking for help doing something around your house or, you know, dealing with your car or your family, asking for some advice on things that normally you would just try and mull over on your own, but practicing relational reliance. Again, the hallmark of the avoidant is I don't need you to be okay because it's only safe for me to rely on me, right? It's only safe for me to rely on me. Whereas with the anxious, it's I can't rely on me. I can only rely on you. And so as the avoidant, you have to practice relying on your partner to contribute to your life, to help you, to support you, and to slowly over time build trust and faith and the understanding that it's safe for you as the avoidant person to rely on another person and that they will continue to show up for you, that they can add value to you, that they can support you, and that you're not going to be burned because of it. Next is practice what I call racing to resolve. Racing to resolve. So it's very common that as an avoidant partner, when conflict happens, it's like you just get to like sit back and you're like, most avoidants get a case of what I call the fuck it's, right? Where it's just like, fuck it. Like they'll deal with it. Whenever they come back to me, whenever they try and repair from this conflict is when it repairs. And so you can go days, sometimes even weeks, and you don't talk about it. And maybe you never even talk about it. And as the avoidant, you're probably okay with that. And so you have to be the one that practices initiating, repairing after some type of a disconnection. And that doesn't have to be some big blow up or some big conflict. It can be that you create a structure for reconnecting after the two of you have been apart, right? So if you're an avoidant and you go away on a work trip and you're gone for 3 days, maybe there's a specific way that you practice reconnecting when you come back and actually re-engaging the relationship instead of walking in the door and being like, hey, what's up? And going and sitting down and turning the TV on or playing video games or whatever it is that you do. So you have to practice racing to resolve and racing to reconnect, because for the avoidant person, it's not a natural tendency. Because again, there's an over-reliance on self and an under-reliance on other and relationship. And so again, after conflict, you can be the one that initiates the repair. After some type of disconnection, you can be the one that initiates the reconnection. After being separated or apart for a couple of days, you can be the one that initiates the reconnection. So practice these types of pieces. And a good one, an easy one is when you are apart, be the one to initiate checking in. Be the one to initiate calling. Like this is something that I had to actively practice because I was a very much like out of sight, out of mind. You know, when I'd be away from a partner, a girlfriend, I just like, you know, for the most part, I wouldn't text or call unless they texted or called me. And so I had to practice being like, hey, how are you? How's your day? How are things going? Or, you know, I'm around tonight from 7 till 8. Do you have time to connect? I'd love to call you. So those are types of things that you can do actively to create connection and lean in. And then lastly is to practice expression. So for the avoidant person, expressing your needs, expressing your wants, expressing when you are feeling disconnected is a very, very hard and uncomfortable thing. So this is the expression that you need to practice. Hey, I would love more of X in our relationship. Or, you know, I've been actually feeling a little disconnected lately. Or, you know what? I would love some space for the next 24 hours, and then I will reconnect with you. Again, if you want this to work with your anxious partner, you have to create some type of structure that lets them know when you're going to reconnect. Because what most avoidants do is they ask for space and they pull away with no reassurance or no real communication about when they're going to come back. And for the anxious person, that's like hell. You know, that's just like, you're putting me in purgatory. I can't do anything from this place. All right. So that's the individual work that the anxious and the avoidant person need to do. Together, there's a couple pieces that I want to talk about. Okay. Obviously, communication is a big part of this. And if the two of you don't feel like you are in a place where you have great communication together, find a third party to help you translate for one another, all right? But very clear, direct communication is important. Next, consistent connection. Practice consistent connection. And what I'm going to say about this is, as the avoidant, you will want to practice consistent connection that's a little uncomfortable for you. So it's pushing an edge. It might feel like it's just a little too much. It's not too much in the sense that you want to bounce out of life in the relationship, but it's like, oh, this feels a little uncomfortable for me. And then for the anxious person, you want to practice consistent connection in a way that is actually dialed down. And so you want to temper the amount of connection that you might expect. And when I talk about consistent connection for the anxious person, I'm talking about consistent connection with you. Within yourself, prioritizing being consistently connected within yourself. So do I feel connected to me? Do I feel connected with, you know, my routines, my habits, my plan for the day? Do I feel connected to my own sense of joy and meaning in life? Do I feel connected to my own sense of purpose and mission in life? And so that's the consistent connection that you require as the anxious. And for the avoidant person, it's leaning into the consistent connection of the relationship, of actually being the one that prioritizes connecting with the other person. And that can be, you know, daily physical contact, you know, hugging the other person, having some type of like, you know, exercise where for a couple of weeks, whenever you come home from work, like you give them a hug and maybe you make out for a little bit, but you find some type of structure or consistency in maintaining contact. Lastly, is prioritizing safety in the self and safety in togetherness, okay? So again, the avoidant and the anxious are just inverse of one another. And the anxious doesn't feel safe within themselves, and the avoidant doesn't feel safe in togetherness. And so what the two of you have to start to talk about and negotiate, okay, and I really mean that word, you have to start to negotiate this, is what you as an anxious person need to start to feel safe within yourself, and what you as an avoidant person need in order to start to feel safe in the togetherness. And I really want you to mull over that question, okay? Write it down if you're the anxious person. What do I think I need to do to feel in order to be safe within myself? And then as the avoidant person, ask yourself the question, what do I think I need in order to feel safe in the togetherness, in the relationship? And that has to be more about you and maybe a little bit about the other person, but it has to be more about like, what do you actually need to feel safe in the togetherness? What do you need to practice? What do you need to prioritize? What maybe do you need from the other person, et cetera? So just go down the list a little bit, create a list, talk about these things if you are in a relationship with somebody that is willing to do this work with you. So as always, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. I hope that this serves you and your life and your relationships. And as always, don't forget to man it forward. Share this with just one person in your life that you know will benefit from it. And DM me on Instagram @mantalks. All right, team. Be well. See you next time.